Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, Cultimatum fans, before we dive into today's episode, we need a tiny favor from each of you.
That's right. If you love what you hear, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple and Spotify.
Your support helps us to reach new listeners and bring more awareness and attention to these important topics.
So tap that star rating, drop a quick review, and help us spread the word. It really does make a difference.
Thank you so much for tuning in and for your amazing support. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. Now let's get started with the show.
Here we go. Welcome back to another episode of Cultimatum, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew, and with me today is my co-host Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you for that introduction. And I'm excited about today's guest as well. Joining us today is going to be Joel Crosby, who grew up in the Potter's House and has since become a powerful voice for those who have left the group behind. Joel is the author of a compelling book titled Escaping the Potter's House, which is also available as an audiobook. The book is a compilation of memoirs from former members, including his own story, Unfiltered, and it was created with a very clear purpose to put an end to the debate of whether or not Potter's House is a cult or a church. Joel's work speaks for itself, and he is dedicated to amplifying the voices of survivors. And it's clear across his social media presence on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. He's joining us today all the way from the Netherlands, and we're so honored to have him here with us. Joel, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, we're excited to hear your story, yes.
I'm excited to tell you my story today.
Great. Where would you like to start?
Well, yeah, I grew up in the Potter's House, the Dutch Potter's House, and that is called The Door, actually. The Potter's House is known through various names. It's founded by Wayman Mitchell in Prescott, Arizona, and he has a group of several churches that he gathered, basically. And they are known as the Potter's House, Victory Chapel, The Door. And nowadays, you have Lighthouse as well. And there's a couple of other names, but they're not as well known. And in the Netherlands, they're only known as The Door. And I grew up in that church. I left, tomorrow will be 6 years ago. And I never really thought that I would eventually leave the church because it was all I knew. I mean, as a kid, I grew up there. I went to all the various activities that they had for children back then. Yeah, the children's church, children's choir. And then eventually I got older. And as I became a teenager, I was supposed to become a disciple. That's actually what they called young men who would eventually be pioneering their own church. Because that's the way it worked. It's kind of like a pyramid scheme is what you could call it. You have this one church, and that church sends out other churches, and those churches are supposed to gather more following, and they will eventually pay their tithes to the mother church. And then you have this whole network of churches that all the money, if you follow the money, all the money is ending up in the head church, the mother church in Prescott, Arizona. And if you follow the money trail, you will see a lot of issues going on. But I will get back in. I will get into that a little bit later, I think.
So before you go on, I just want to double check. You said that in the Netherlands, this church is called The Door?
Yeah. I mean, that's the translation of, they call it De Deur, is the Dutch word.
Okay. Interesting. Is there any meaning behind that? The door?
We never really asked about the meaning behind the door.
Okay. It was just a strange name for a church.
Maybe it was like inviting people into the door. The door is always open, kind of.
Okay.
In that or way. The door to heaven.
Potter's house. I mean, that one is pretty obvious, I guess. Victory Chapel is just a basic name for a church, but there's a lot of churches called Victory Chapel that aren't associated with the fellowship, what we call the fellowship, at least. But well, yeah.
And the Victory Chapel has the word chapel in it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know it's a church. But
right.
This one was called The Door.
And yeah.
I don't really
maybe
know
the door
why.
To heaven, like Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, and when I was growing up, it was the gates of heaven. So I.
Right.
Okay. No, yeah. I was just curious. I there's no meaning. So anyway, continue.
Yeah. It might as well have been called The Window.
That's my point. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So yeah, I was part of the Potter's House or of The Door. I call it all the names just because they're known as the Potter's House. I will call it the Potter's House sometimes. And I was supposed to become a disciple. So I did everything that I had to do as a disciple, which includes going to the youth camps. They had these camps once a year. And this was like a military boot camp. You had young teenagers getting drilled. I don't know how common that is in the States, but this was something that I have never been as hungry as I was in one of those boot camps because there wasn't enough food at one time.
Wait, go back. The teenagers were being what?
Drilled.
Drilled.
Yeah, you had drill sergeants and they screamed.
Oh, like the military. Okay.
Military. It was a military camp. And the reason why they have these military camps for teenagers is they want these teenagers to become used to abuse, basically. Because then if they're used to this abuse in the camp, then they will stay members of the Potter's House.
Is that the explanation they gave you? Or
it's something that I discovered later.
Right, because it sounds to me like that it's something that might, if I was doing that as a cult leader, I would say, well, this would build character.
What they did say, what they were open about, is they are trying to break the characters of these teenagers and then to build them back up.
Correct. Okay.
Yeah.
Which, so, I'm just going to add, is a common cult tactic, and even the food deprivation can be a common cult tactic.
Yeah. But that food deprivation, to be fair, that might have just been my experience. I have heard other people who have had other experiences that I have not had.
Right.
During those camps, sometimes for women, it was kind of creepy at one point. But yeah, for me, it was just the food deprivation, the sleep deprivation, and the abuse, basically verbal abuse.
If you don't want to go into detail, that's fine. But can you define creepy?
I heard this one story where there was a drill sergeant. I don't really remember the story all too well, but it involved the girls being in wet clothes and getting a creepy vibe from the drill sergeant.
Okay. So sexual connotation.
Inappropriate.
Yeah, kind of.
Inappropriate. Okay.
Yeah. And I wasn't there.
Not surprising.
No, I wasn't there. And this is just one of the experiences that I've heard of. But I was kind of involved in church. And at one point, I really didn't want to be involved anymore. So I tried to stay at home. My mom tried to get me to go to church. This is something that most teenagers experience at one point. They just don't want to go to church anymore. It's normal, I guess. And then when I did go to church and I heard these sermons where the pastor said, it's normal to have a relationship with your pastor. You have to go to the pastor and ask him for advice about anything. What study you have to do in college, where you have to work, where you have to live, the stuff going on in your family, whatever, just counseling conversations, basically counseling. So I went to my pastor.
I do have a quick question,
because,
Joel.
Yeah.
How old were you at the time? And was there anything in particular that was causing you to have some doubts at that time?
I was about 15, 16. And the reason why I was having doubts is because I got bullied a lot in school because I was different. The reason why I was different was because when I went to high school for the first time, I was scared that I would lose my salvation. I was just a kid. I heard all these horror stories about teenagers going to high school and then trying to fit in. And they started drinking and started smoking and cussing and just not being Christians anymore.
Okay, so this was a public school? Them.
Yeah, it was a public school.
Okay, so, not affiliated with the church.
Then I got scared that I would lose my salvation, and I started listening to these testimonies. So then I thought the way to keep my salvation is not to try to fit in. And by not fitting in, that meant I got bullied a lot. I got bullied so much that I got beat up at school, sometimes weekly. It happened more than once, at least. I have been on 8 different schools because of bullying at 4 of them. So, and because I got bullied so much, I went to the pastor and I told him I'm depressed. I'm having issues with that. And then I thought he would have to cast out some type of demon that is causing the depression or whatever. This is what my thought was. But instead, he just told me to smile, because if I smile, then my brain would make some kind of chemical reaction and I would be happy again. So that didn't work. And the other thing that he told me is I told him about my father. My father was very sick at that time, and I didn't really have an all too good relationship with him at that time. And I told him about that, and then he told me something that shattered my view of my father, and that is that my father was a rebel, and I would have to look for another father figure in the church. And with that, he meant himself. And I didn't know he meant himself. I just thought anyone in church would do. But that shattered my view of my father. And I kind of started hating my dad. I didn't want to be his son anymore. I was ashamed of him. And my dad really didn't know why that happened. But that was because of what the pastor told me.
So this man, the pastor, lied, made up things about your father to distance yourself from him.
Yeah, yeah.
And, in hindsight, was that a tactic for a particular reason? Was he trying to cause a division, or was your dad stopping? Was he not believing in the church anymore? Or
no, my dad was smarter than anyone in the church. He knew more stuff about the Bible than anyone in the church. He was fluent in Hebrew and Greek, studied the Bible like no one else did. And he would listen to the sermons, and he would know that what these pastors are saying is wrong, and he would call them out publicly, and that's not something you're supposed to do.
So, okay.
He was seeing
through the facade. Couldn't figure out why he would.
Yeah, he was starting to see through the facade.
Yeah, he was trying to see through it, but because the reason why he didn't see through it was because he was sick, and he was in the hospital and out of the hospital the entire time. So he missed a couple of years of the cult, which is why he didn't realize that it was a cult. You know, he didn't realize what was going on inside the church.
Can I ask what illness that he was in the hospital?
It's a whole list of things. Basically,
okay.
When he was in the army, they gave him injections. Probably that is what caused him to get hepatitis. So he got medication for the hepatitis, and that medication gave him arthritis, I guess. Or okay. Something else. I'm not sure. Eventually, he had 10 different sicknesses, and his medication list was 3 pages long. I learned to swallow pills. He taught me how to swallow pills. It's just one hand of pills, and then just put it in your mouth, swallow, and then again. He did that like 3 handsful.
Wow.
And my entire...
At one time.
At one time, yeah. My entire youth, I prepared myself for my father's death. I thought he was going to die. He wouldn't live that long. And, well, he's still alive. And that's shocking, actually.
Well, he is still alive.
He's still alive. And
oh, good.
He was in a wheelchair 4 years long. He was in a wheelchair. And then he got cancer. And then he got an operation. And the cancer was gone. And he got medication for the hepatitis that was experimental. They wouldn't give him the medication for the hepatitis without giving him antidepressants as well, because the medication would cause suicide or him to murder someone because it made him so depressed.
Wow.
Yeah, he got into some psychoses. It was a very difficult time for him. Eventually, from one point to the next, he didn't need the wheelchair anymore, and he was walking to church. And he started riding his bikes. And people were shocked at seeing that. I remember people's jaws dropping to the floor as they saw him walk past.
I bet. And I'm going to make an assumption that he's no longer in the cult as well?
No, he left before me.
Okay. And that's, okay. I just want to clarify.
That's a huge story as well, because when he left the church, I was still living at home, and I already didn't like him that much because of what the pastor told me. And when he left, that made me really, really angry. And my mom left as well after that, like a couple months later. I got so mad at them. I made it very difficult for them. Every time that I got home from church, I would not meet people that were visiting our home. I would not shake their hand or whatever, not greet them. And I would pick fights with my parents because of what they believe. They didn't believe the same that we did anymore. And that was difficult for me. And at that point, I started looking for a home of myself, a place to rent. And my plan was to live somewhere else and then to break off contact with my family. I didn't want to see my parents ever again.
And this was all based on what this pastor told you.
Yeah. Yeah, was based on actually all my years there. When people leave the church, they are rebels. And a rebel is not someone who has made up their own mind, is doing their own thing. A rebel is someone who is basically guilty of witchcraft. And I have a quote of Jesse Cluck. He's one of the pastors in the Potter's House. He said that if you are a rebel, you might as well dress up in all black and sacrifice a small goat because you're following Satan just as clearly. They say that rebellion is demonic. It is a demon spirit. And if you have a demon spirit, it means you're demon possessed. And what 2 Samuel 15 verse 22, I think it was, or 1 Samuel, I'm not sure anymore. That says that rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. But if you read that Bible verse in context, it says rebellion against God is as the sin of witchcraft. So there is a difference between rebellion against your God or against a pastor. But there is also a pastor called Darren Manzone. I'm not sure if I pronounce his name correctly, but he's from Hurstville, Australia. And he says that rebellion against God is called witchcraft. Rebellion against your pastor is called what? Witchcraft. That's what he says. He says he takes it further in that quote. I have the video of it.
But in hindsight, now that you're out and your dad's alive, so I guess I have a twofold question. Do you speak to your father today, and do you not believe in what they, in other words, you know that what they were telling you, feeding you, were lies back then?
Yeah, I know that they were feeding me lies. I know why they were doing that. And I know that, and I have a very good relationship with my father.
Excellent. Very good to hear.
I speak to my father daily. He is very involved with everything I do. He thinks it's great. I tell him every update that I'm working on about basically exposing is a very big word, but I'm trying to make these stories of abuse visible, because I'm not the only person who has experienced cult-like behavior in the church. We have a Facebook group with 3,000 members right now, a little bit over 3,000 members. And I hear all these stories, and there are a lot of people, especially in the States, that are too scared to speak up. And that's why I share my stories, because there are so many people who don't have the courage to speak up, because the Potter's House has a very, very good legal team. They have very good lawyers, and they have unlimited funds because everybody tithes to the Prescott Church. So these lawyers will destroy your life, and they will not feel guilty about it. They try to break up families. They try to take children away from parents because the parents are divorcing. I heard of one story where the pastor asked 5 people in the church to write a letter to a judge, to tell the judge to take away the children of this woman because she was an alcoholic and she was divorcing from her husband. Her husband was involved in pornography for multiple years, and that's why she became an alcoholic. So, and she did lose her children because of that.
But was this true?
Yeah, it was true. Yeah, I know this woman.
Oh, so she was an alcoholic and the father was into pornography.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And but she eventually got into rehab and is doing much better, but she did lose her children.
This might be a good segue to get into. I'm assuming this is what led you to write your book then.
Yeah. I when I got out of the cults, we didn't really have that much. All we had is one Facebook group. And that one Facebook group is actually, yeah, I joined it and I saw all these people who all agreed that someone has to do something, and nobody really did anything. So then I eventually decided I'm going to try to do the only thing I know how, and that's how to write a book, because I had been trying to become a writer for some years already, but I didn't want to write about this. I wanted to write fiction. And instead, I had to write about my worst traumas. And I publish it for all the world to read. But I kind of got sick of this back and forth between current members and former members about it's a cult, no, it's not. It's a cult, no, it's not. So that's why I decided to write a book where I try to get people to follow the train of thought. Why is it a cult? So I begin with a foreword my dad wrote about just history. And then in the preface, I talk about why I wrote the book. And there's a bunch of different things that I could have done to say why is the Potter's House a cult. But I eventually end up with the fellowship, is what we called it. The fellowship follows man and not God. And then I explain why. And I have a bunch of examples that I give there. And then I try to show that in the main contents of the book, I try to show that it's not just me. It's not the one guy with a bad experience and that's it, because that's one of the arguments that I got as well. I involved 10 people in making this book from all over the world, because we have we have 4,000 churches now in 125 countries. And I got 10 people from 4 different countries to write their stories. And eventually I closed the book with a bunch of contracts and letters from former pastors to show that this isn't biblical. It's a crazy, crazy church. At best, it's just a manipulative church. But I would say, because it follows everything that the Bite Model describes by Stephen Hassan.
I was just going to ask you, does it follow the Bite Model? Okay.
Yeah. It follows that exactly. I have published an analysis of the Bite Model on the Potter's House on my website. If you Google Bite Model analysis of the Potter's House, you will find it. And that goes really into depth of.
And
of
we will add that, a link to your website in the show notes, so that the audience can find that and follow that as well.
Awesome. Sounds good. Yeah, because we still do get a lot of comments from former members. I just had one today who said, this is what I don't understand. You have these current members and they are supposedly better Christians than I am. I'm still a Christian, but they find themselves better. And then because they are still members of the Potter's House and I am no longer, so that makes me a rebel or something. And then they show very un-Christ-like behavior because they are supposedly, they have to be Christ-like and they're not. This one guy told me today, suck your mother. That's not Christian. That's just a hypocrite. So these are stupid comments that I get. Some other people just, I don't really remember. I try not to think about it that much.
By the way, I Googled exactly what you said, the Bite Model. Yeah, Bite Model of the, just wrote Bite Model of the Potter House, and you're the first one that came up.
Good.
I was?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm kind of assuming from what you've said that the Potter's House also participates in shunning, excommunication, whatever you want to call it. There's multiple terms for that, depending on the cult or group that you're in. From what you've said, it sounds like they do participate in that. And they were actually even trying to get you to excommunicate your parents because of because they had left, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Go
ahead.
Sorry?
Go ahead. You go ahead. Finish that, and then I'll ask my second question.
All right. When I eventually did decide to leave the Potter's House, it was a whole process that went on before that. When I finally made that decision, I knew I would lose all my friends. But there were four exceptions, four people that I thought, these are true friends, and I will be friends with them forever. So I invited those four to my wedding, and two of them told me through WhatsApp that I was outside of the will of God, that I should not get married, and that I should follow the pastor and do what he said. And both of those friends who said that, they both left the church as well, and we are friends again. But all the other friends, I didn't leave. And
so my next question is, what was it that finally, what was your final straw that made you finally decide that you needed to leave and that you no longer believed that they were the correct church?
Well, my perfect view of the church, it kind of got shattered when one of the women in the church told me that our pastor had sexually abused her. And she told me that it wasn't just sexual abuse. He had a blood fetish. He fantasized about being slaughtered and killed, and he wanted women to kill a fish for him on video. And then he supposedly lost the tape, and they had to do it over and over and over. And then eventually, one of the women who was involved in this, she got a skeptic. I'm not sure. I can't get the right word. But she kind of
Suspicious.
She was, and she asked him, why do you want us to kill these fish over and over again? And then he said, I find it exciting. I have a fetish for killing and for women with knives and all these crazy, crazy things. He associated with his name in Dutch. In Dutch, there's a word for it, but his name he associated with a boar. And he thought he was a filthy pig who needed to be slaughtered. His ultimate goal was that a woman would kill a pig. And I have heard that that did happen, but I don't really remember if that's true. Now, the newspaper did report on a woman killing a pig. So, yes, that did happen. But also chicken and fish. And when she told me that this all took place, I thought there must be a mistake. This cannot be the same pastor that, I mean, I looked up to the guy. So I did the only thing that I thought I could do to stop it. And I went to the church board and I told them the story. And I said, you're not allowed to do anything with this story because I don't have permission to tell you this story. So I'm going to ask this girl to come to you and she will tell you the story and then you can act upon it. So I tried to convince her and it took me 3 months to convince her. And in those 3 months, I did not sleep. I got incredibly stressed out. My job was going bad. I mean, I just got up from my desk and I told him I can't take it anymore. And I went home. I was way burned out trying to keep myself from doing stupid things. And my relationship with my girlfriend, we broke up. Because she knew that there was something I wasn't telling her. And she wanted me to be honest about it, and I couldn't. And then eventually, after 3 months, this girl, she went to the pastor. No, not to the pastor, to the board of elders, the church board. And she told them what happened. And the next Sunday, he was preaching his last sermon in the morning. And then after that, the church board got into the office. And the office windows were open. I could see everything that was going on inside the office. I was standing outside. And it looked like a normal conversation between three men. I didn't see anything that was going on there. No emotion, nothing. And then eventually these three men got up. And I kind of got nervous because I thought he lied about it or something. And they got up. He got out and he saw me looking. And that's when I knew that the conversation didn't take place because the way he looked at me, it was pure evil. He was angry at me because he knew I was involved. So the next evening, it was announced he was dethroned. He was basically removed from his ministry because of what they called moral failure. And moral failure can mean anything. It means maybe he smoked a cigarette. You know, that is what moral failure means. Can mean anything. But I was happy he was gone. And 2 weeks later, there was a wedding in church and we were attending the wedding and this girl was as well. And then she gets a phone call. She has to come home. And then she comes home and she sees her house being graffitied with the words slut and whore. Because the story was that she seduced the pastor. So it was a consensual relationship. That's what they said.
So they turned it around on her, and now he's the victim.
They turned it around on her. Then later, some Sunday later, it was announced that we would get a new pastor, and this pastor was the best friend of the former pastor, and he turned it around completely. He said that it was a consensual relationship. He was gaslighting me into almost believing it as well. And eventually, I figured out that everything that was going on, it was just being swept under the rug. And I got suspicious and my parents were already out. And eventually I asked my parents if the church is really that bad, because I was frustrated at the church. I wasn't supposed to listen to rebels or whatever, but this time I did. I said, if the church is bad, don't come with your personal experiences. Show me that it's bad in the Bible. And they wrote 33 pages. And I studied those 33 pages of verses in the Bible. And I got it reduced to 6 points. Six basic questions that I had, of which two I didn't even want to ask the pastor. But then I asked the pastor because I didn't have a response to my parents, and I really wanted them to be wrong, because if they were wrong, then I wasn't. I went to the pastor. I asked him, what do I respond to my parents, because this is what they're saying. And the pastor didn't want to answer my question. He just asked me, do you still believe in leadership and in tithing, as if those were the most important things to discuss at that time. I did believe in those things, but the way he was asking them, I thought, should I? And then I went home. And then at the same time, I also had to ask permission to ask my wife to marry me, so to propose. I got permission. I went to the I proposed to her. She said yes, and then I had to ask when we could get married, because the pastor picks the date. Then he sat me down with my wife and told my wife while I was there that she should not marry me. If she married me, she would end up miserable. I would be a very bad husband, everything, blah, blah, blah. And during that entire conversation, I said nothing, because I knew that if I uttered one word against what he was saying, then it would legitimize what he already thought of me, that I was a rebel. It would confirm that already. And I said nothing, but this was the drop for me. This was, they had no right, after all the crap they have put me through. The worst thing that I've ever experienced in my life was because of them. I didn't sleep for 3 months because of it. And they had the audacity to not let me get married while I tried to do everything according to their stupid rules. That was it for me. So I stood up after the conversation.
Not to mention assassinating your character to your future wife.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we got up, and my wife was she was crying. You know, she said, what are we supposed to do? Did you hear how he was talking about you, as if you were a piece of trash? That's what she said. And then my response to that was, I'm used to it already, because that's how they treated me my entire life. I was the son of a rebel, and that automatically made me a rebel. And I had to prove that I wasn't like my father, and I had to do everything to prove my legitimacy to them, to prove that I'm a good disciple. Didn't make sense, because I didn't do anything wrong. There were stories about me that were being gossiped, that I was aggressive. My wife was told to make me angry to see how I would react. There was another story where they said that I asked girls to remove their clothes on the webcam or something, which I never did. These stories went around, and that's because this place
I'm
is
following you at this point.
When I asked my wife to marry me, that was 6 years ago, exactly 6 years ago. Yeah. And we got out and we got married 4 months later.
Well, good. She left with you. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, so all these accusations were being bestowed, what's the word, by the same pastor that you reported?
Yeah.
Okay.
By multiple people, actually. By this pastor, his best friend, and a bunch of people in the leadership there as well.
Would you think this was retaliation?
I think this is just the only logical explanation to a toxic environment.
Right.
Is that people start to gossip because there's nothing else to talk about. Everybody knows everybody. There's not much else going on. So you gossip about everybody. And
well, the story about the pastor that liked to wash women with knives and blood.
Yeah.
And you had somebody come forward and tell the other elders about him. That was the pastor that tried to distance you from your father, correct?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So you get him dethroned, I think was the word. And then all of this started happening after that?
Yeah.
The rumors and the lies about you and the webcam. Yeah. And
there were already some rumors going on before that, but that's because this pastor who was involved with the knives and everything, he liked to gossip about people as well.
Okay.
So every time I went to him to confess one of my sins or something, I did this or that, then he would just tell anybody in church who would listen.
Wait a minute. I know I was brought up in a different religion and a different thing, but when you go to confession, that's supposed to be confidential. So you're telling me you went and spoke to a pastor and he would go tell everybody else what you told him?
Yeah. That's crazy.
I'm with Andrew. I think that this was retaliation and they were trying to discredit you. They were trying to discredit anything that you said. They were trying to discredit you before you even said anything else.
Yeah, but it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, they tried to retaliate against me while I never intended to do anything against them.
Other than a lawyer client, one of the most sacred bonds that I'm aware of is between, you know, if you're religious, is between you and your minister or your pastor or your priest or your spiritual leader. If you sit down with them and confess something that's been on your that bothered you. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, maybe you thought about it, whatever. That's confidential. That's why you go to that person so you know that you can, obviously, I think there's some rules about, you know, like legality if you hurt somebody, you murdered somebody. You know, yeah. And even then, the Catholic Church, I think, won't allow it. So this guy goes out and blabbers about everything that you told him.
Yeah.
Is what you're telling us.
But here's the problem. The reason why this isn't really a legal issue of any kind is that the Potter's House, the fellowship, they don't believe in any type of formal education. So there is no Bible school, no theology that you're learning. So what you have is basically an organization with a pyramid scheme where some people have the authority, and these people that are in authority, it's based on nothing. It's based on they were given that authority by their pastor. And when you go to the judge or to lawyers and you tell them about this, you cannot prove that this person was indeed a pastor because he didn't have any type of education. He is not an ordained minister. All he is a former farmer. He wasn't even a farmer. He did go to school to become a farmer, even though he was a city boy. So this just didn't make sense.
So I see what you're saying, that he wasn't formally a trained as a pastor, but still ignore the balloons. If my iMac does that, the fact that you went to a spiritual person to confess or talk about something, it's still supposed to be considered sacred and private.
Yep.
Never mind. I'm trying to make rational sense of something from a cult. Yes. I don't know why I'm doing
that. No, I get where you're saying. Basically, that's kind of an unwritten rule, Andrew. I hear what you're saying. Legal or not legal, just ethically, that's not right for somebody in that type of position to do that to a parishioner of their organization.
But I got to forget that we're on a podcast about cults, and cults don't follow tradition.
They do what they want, especially cult leaders. Yes, exactly. All the rules go out the
Where's that list from our other podcast, from our other episode, that one of the rules where we can do whatever we want? So the playbook.
Yes, the playbook.
Amazing. Okay, so tell us a little bit about the last 6 years of your life, where you are today. Are you married?
Yeah, I'm married. We did get married 4 months after we were not allowed to get married. We got married, and the previous 6 years have been very interesting because I wouldn't imagine myself here right now. So what happened is we got married. I wrote my book. I published my book 2 years ago in May. And after I published my book, I got in contact with someone else. And he is a former member of a cult in the Netherlands. And he became international news overnight when he escaped, because he grew up on a farm and he hadn't left that farm in 9 years. And the Dutch government didn't know he existed because he was hidden from everybody from his birth. So he kind of grew up in captivity. He wasn't a captive. I mean, he could leave, but he didn't because, you know, that's what you do when you're in a cult. You're captive of your own mind. And he became a celebrity here in the Netherlands, and we started working together with one other guy who also escaped a cult. He is now a cult expert with the police. He's involved in setting up a department about cults, specifically within the police department. And the three of us, we all wrote about our experiences in books. And now we started our own organization where we give lectures and trainings to caretakers like therapists and psychologists of former cult members, because you have all these therapists, they want to help, but they think it is the same thing as post-traumatic stress syndrome or disorder, we say syndrome in the Netherlands, so, but it's disorder. But it's not the same thing as PTSD. It is religious trauma syndrome, religious trauma disorder. And this is much bigger because you don't have these few traumatic experiences. You have a identity that was taken from you or that you have never been able to develop. You have to figure out how to integrate into society, the same society that you have actively resisted your entire life because that was what was expected of you in a cult. And we are training these therapists and seeing that there's a bunch of people who are really trying to help former cult members. And something else that I have been working on and that is finally finished since last week is I started my own nonprofit. I set up a nonprofit to help specifically former members of the Potter's House, of the Door Fellowship churches. And we are organizing support groups in person so that we can kind of reconnect with people or connect with people we don't really know, have never really met. But these are people who have all experienced the same thing. We have all been in the same cult and we know what it's like. And that's one of the things that you notice when you're out. So nobody really understands what you have been through. And then you have these support groups and everybody is talking about the same thing. We all know what it's like. We've all been in the same tyrannic dictatorship.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't realize you were part of that. I love the idea of helping therapists to understand the complexities of the religious trauma syndrome, because it is a whole different ballgame that they don't, unless you've been in it, because I'm a cult survivor too, unless you've been there, you don't understand it, because they may inadvertently say things that would trigger somebody that's in therapy without even realizing that they've done that. But that's awesome. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right, Joe, we have to begin to wrap up, but I have a question. I'm on. So that when you had me Google the BITE model, up came two of your books. And I'm curious, are they the same book? Because one is in Dutch and one is in English. And it's called Escaping the Potter's House. Are they both the same book, just in different languages?
Yeah, it's different languages and a different title. It's not a translated title because it's not called the Potter's House in the Netherlands. It's called the Deur. So I had a thing with a door in there.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the title of the book.
Because Behind Closed Doors is what it means. Behind Closed Doors.
Okay. In English. And that's English translation.
No, that's the English translation of the Dutch title. But it's the English book is called Escaping the Potter's House.
Right.
All right. And you have other books. You have several books out, I see.
Yeah, I have four books in total. One of them is Escaping the Potter's House, translated into Dutch as well. So that's two books.
Okay.
And then you have two other books. Those are fiction based on reality. So these are personal experiences of mine that I kind of hid.
Okay, well, we will have the relevant links in all of the show notes for your episode. I'm going to ask my final question that I like to ask our guests, which is, what advice would you give somebody who either is coming out of a cult or thinking about joining a cult or thinking that the group that they're in might be a cult? What advice would you give them?
You got to research the group. You got to research it so much, even when you're going out, that you will not fall into the same trap again. What I've noticed is that a lot of cult members, there's a pattern, and that pattern causes cult members to join another cult. And if you never learn what the problem was, what the reason was why you joined a cult in the first place, even if you were born into it, then you're never gonna stop falling into the same trap.
Excellent advice. Excellent.
Excellent advice.
Thanks.
Okay. So, Joel, thank you so much for coming and joining us all the way from the Netherlands. And I'm really happy. He's got a big smile on his face. So great story.
Appreciate it.
We'll put all of the books and your new project, all that in the show notes. And again, thank you. Anything else, Melody, we'd like to say?
No, I'm good. Thank you, Joel.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming on.
Right.
And once again, we want to thank Joel so much for coming on the show and sharing his experience with the Potter's House and the book that he's written about leaving the Potter's House. And I guess the one thing I did want to touch on that I found somewhat interesting, because I wrote a note about it, but he kind of went past it pretty quickly, was that when he went to his pastor for advice about depression, and the pastor basically told him all he needed to do was, and that would change his brain chemistry and he would just automatically feel better. And I just thought, that is such horrible advice. And that is not how depression works. And it made me think of the documentary Shiny Happy People, which is about the Duggar family. And they're part of the IFB church, which it basically is kind of the same premise of just a smile or keep sweet, which is also, I think that one is, that's not IFB. I can't think of what the keep sweet is, but it is the premise of the religious thing of always just have a smile up front to help keep our facade alive. Basically, it's just they want smiling people to make their organization look good. And they don't want to acknowledge that people inside their organization may be fighting or struggling with depression or mental health issues.
Or be just being miserable because they're in a cult.
Right. Well, exactly. No, but they want, but they want that fake upfront. Just smile and pretend nothing's wrong. It's so upsetting and sickening.
There was clearly something wrong with this pastor from the get-go, because this, the whole blood thing with the fish was, and the I really, I'm like, what?
Yeah, that was some of the most bizarre stuff I'd ever heard.
Yeah, listen, on my other podcast, I hear some wacky stories, especially in the kink world and the other stuff. But this, outside of the sexuality stuff, this was weird. I mean, having women slice up fish so he can see blood, and that's disturbing.
They wanted the fish to be alive, and they had to kill them. And apparently there was one time a pig involved, and bizarre.
Very disturbing. Bizarre
stuff. Yes. Bizarre, disturbing.
Extremely
stuff.
Disturbing. I think he did a great job. I always do in each episode when a guest brings up something and I can, well, either he's talking or you're talking, I will always Google that. And I did Google everything he was talking about. And there is a lot of information about him and the books and the bite model. And he does talk about the bite model for the Potter's House. He's got a whole little thing on it. So
yes. And as you know, the bite model, that's not the first time the bite model has come up in our podcast. But for any of you who don't know, I'll just quickly go over it here really quick again, what it stands for. Metric used by created by Stephen Hassan, who is a cult survivor himself. He's a survivor from the movies, or the Moonies, excuse me, not the movies, Moonies. And it stands for B is for behavior, I is for information, T is for thought, E is for emotion. So if a cult is trying to control all of those aspects of your life, behavior, information, thought, and emotion, then that those are all red flags. And most likely you are in a cult or a very high control group. I will just say that for anybody who hasn't heard of what the bite model is yet.
And it was interesting that, so just to the audience, we had just recorded another episode right before Joel. And the woman we had on, who you might probably have heard last week if the episodes go in order.
Yes.
She gave us a playbook of that she wrote of what makes a cult. And I'm looking for it now. I'm trying to.
What was the 10, like a, the 10 signs or the 10 rules of a cult or something? Right. It was like we were receiving that playbook we talk about. Like we got a secret copy of the cult leader playbook from Kim, who put it together and said, this is kind of the playbook they use.
And when I questioned why, I forget what I asked him, and then I realized that in that playbook, I think it was number 4 and number 5 is a cult says that we can do anything we want.
Right.
And that's exactly
we can't
what
be questioned. Yes. No,
we can't
I think
be questioned.
Was, oh,
right.
I know it was. You were asking basically how could a pastor or a preacher or somebody in that authoritarian role within a church or an organization or a cult defy or betray your confidence. You're going to them in confidence.
The sanctity of confidential.
Yes, exactly. Nobody would expect to go to their preacher. Yes.
Yeah. Take it even one step further. If you have somebody that you like husband and wife, you know, you're supposed to, in the court of law, the husband can't testify against the wife. It's just the way it is. But then when I find out that these, I'm surprised that the pastor there is not an educated or ordained. He's a farmer. So
right. Yes.
I realize, like, why am I questioning something that,
yeah, exactly.
It's a
and
cult,
that's how most cult leaders are. They've either given themselves some type of authority, or like he said, it's just passed on from generation to generation, or they just pick somebody randomly to pass on that torch to.
I'm thinking these guys have gone through school and education and,
right,
you know, ministries, oh, exactly, and all that kind of stuff.
Or like Kim stated in her little list of the 10 rules of the cult leader there, too, is that you're not allowed to question that authority either. So,
correct.
Yes. Yes. Basically, you just have to go with the flow. And another thing she said in her interview was that the more corrupt you are, the higher you go, because you keep tolerating the corruption. So that means that most likely the people at the top are the most corrupt.
Right. It's like telling a lie. The more you tell the lie, the deeper you get into it. And so,
yes, yeah, exactly. Then, yeah, you got to tell another lie to cover up the lie. Yep. And yes, exactly. So, well, once again, we want to thank Joel so much for coming on the show and sharing his experience and his story about the Potter's House. And we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum, and your support, as always, is greatly appreciated. If you enjoyed today's episode, if you could just take a moment to rate and review us on platforms such as Apple and Spotify, especially Apple. It does really help us out. Hopefully you'll give us five stars. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes as well.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can also find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, please reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And for ex-cult members that are in need of additional support, please consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
You can also check out my other podcasts if you'd like to hear more from the Anonymous Andrew Podcast Studios. I have two other podcasts. One's called Digital Dating and one is called The Weekend Rant. And both are available on the same platform that you are listening to this podcast on. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can support us through the Buy Us a Cup of Coffee link in our show notes. Every bit helps in our mission to spread awareness about occults and human trafficking. And just a quick note, thank you to the people who have been donating. Finally, yeah, we got some donations. So I did not want to have that go unthanked. We're, yes, very, very much grateful for that. Yeah, so keep giving. Yeah. It helped, but it's not enough.
Yeah, but we appreciate every little bit. So thank you so much.
We appreciate everything you can do. Yes.
Even if you can just give us $5, it does make a difference. And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.